You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Louis Kamnitzer from New York. Louis, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Oh, thank you.
Louis, let's begin with what you're working on now. I know your history and the impact you've had on art as a in general has been profound in my estimate, and I think in many other people's views. Can you tell me a little bit about what you're working on now or preparing for?
Well, I basically always was interested in education since I'm 17, and that slowly has been taking over in the last couple of years, diminishing art production. And maybe I have fewer ideas than I used to have. I'm getting old, but also I think that my energy is probably better invested in trying to challenge educational systems than making objects. So that's what I'm doing.
So I'm working. What does that mean? Yeah, exactly.
I feel that art is really a meta-discipline for knowledge and not just a way of producing things. And it's a broader field than any other way of acquisition of knowledge. For me, it encompasses everything else. It allows to use utopia as a reference, which other ways of thinking don't. And utopia, for me, is a quality control reference, not really a state to be achieved. Once utopia would be achieved, it would stop being utopia. But as a reference, I think it's useful, because then you know what you really would like to achieve and what you're giving up when you negotiate that with the context you're working in.
And I agree with that. How is that being actualized? So what is your process now for discussing that or having that idea move out into the world?
Yeah, it's mostly based on problem formulation and how to formulate a precise problem or how to have a solution and figure out what the problem is it's solving, even if you don't know it when you find the solution. So it's a bidirectional process, which in art is normal. It's just a bidirectional feedback and forward feed that slowly coalesces in your artwork. And that's a way of working. I mean, some scientists use it too, but it's not something that is really systematized and used consciously. And I think it's a process that should go along the whole course of studies from kindergarten onward, and not interrupted by quantitative thinking, which is what starts happening in primary school. So
let's talk about an alternative as to what would happen in primary school with the way you're thinking and perhaps proposing a system. What could happen in primary school that would be different than what we currently have?
Well, in primary school and already in kindergarten, you're giving materials to work with, which is good for small motor skills or bigger motor skills, but it doesn't really deal with problem formulation in terms of what art is, and you're encouraged according to the taste of the teacher and the art prejudices teachers may have and family may have. And usually those are related to the ability to render and not to acquire new knowledge that so far is unknown for the child or even for the adult. And rendering is basically already a quantitative approach. For each dot you have, you perceive, you make a dot on paper. So people start being classified consciously or unconsciously in the way they process information on a quantitative level, rather than what kind of connections and unexpected connections they are making. So I think as soon as possible, children should decide what is art, what is not art, regardless what criteria are used for the definition of what art is, It's a personal decision at that level and an arbitrary one, but it starts leading into a taxonomic approach of categories. And then how do you convince somebody that what you decided is art is actually art? So then you're dealing with presentation and communication. And those things that sound schematic, the way I'm talking, in fact, are related to how a child develops in terms of fitting into society. But this way, I feel, it allows for creativity to remain uncontaminated, untouched, and negotiated slowly into what is expected in society, and compare it and challenge it or accept it, but in a much more conscious way.
I like that, and I would certainly like to see that happening more. It seems that is an area that is sorely needed in education, especially in the arts. I mean, it's a very different idea than, as I understand it, I'll be talking with Philip Yenewine next week, and he has a kind of visual literacy program that works with kids. He's been in the education department at MoMA for years.
Yeah, I know.
But that's in a way quite different, as I understand it, from what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think what he or they do is really go through the work of art to expand on what you can see through the work or in the work. And for me, that limits knowledge. It doesn't really, I mean, you only can see what the work of art allows you to see, and it acts like a tunnel. I rather go around the work of art and deal with the conditions that make the work of art inevitable and indispensable, and from those conditions have public or children develop their own solutions and work on the same level with the artist horizontally and not as a consumer. So visual literacy tends to be an expanded consumption of sorts and not a creation, in my view.
I mean, makes sense.
I'm sure he won't agree with me, but that's my view.
Well, he might, because on the way, I mean, I certainly agree with you, because knowing that approach to some degree, it's, instead of telling a child what this painting is about or what this sculpture installation is about, the teachers or educators are taught to ask questions. You know, what do you see here, and what else do you see here, and what does that mean?
Yeah.
So that is an expanded kind of consumption. But what you're talking about is, to my mind, much richer in understanding ways of thinking that artists pursue. Because I mostly talk with, well, I exclusively talk with, mature artists or artists that are in their career. Path to some extent, and they're already talking about what they're researching on, what the work is, trying to point towards. Whereas as a child, nobody really hears about that till maybe college or after college.
Yeah, you have to unlearn what you learned and come back and make a decision. And there could be a
So to me, it's fascinating what you're saying, but how would that actually happen? I mean, I'm following you all along, and that seems to be a theory and approach I want to support. How would this actually happen in a school? Like, what would be the syllabus or approach of a teacher with this kind of, with your method?
Well, it requires a transdisciplinary approach. It requires probably suspending the word art for a while, and definitely suspending the word teaching and make the focus on learning and on facilitating autodidacticism. What you really want is that the student, no matter at what stage you engage the person, becomes independent as quickly as possible, and that the so-called teacher becomes dispensable as soon as possible, so that the subject would get engaged in a long, lifelong process of acquiring and expanding knowledge without the help of an adult, in quotes, that supervises it. And we're still working on the notion of erudition, of quantitative accumulation of knowledge, which becomes obsolete very quickly and increasingly quickly. By now, by the time you learn information, it's obsolete anyway. And instead of facilitating access to information, that is something you will need continually and into the future. So information is already stored. You don't have to store it in your brain. What you need is mechanisms to get to it and the flexibility in making connections, and mostly unexpected and probably even subversive connections that allow you to put together systems that normally would not be accepted as having links. And with that, you would start very creatively figuring out what can I use and for what and what should I dismiss. Now, that wouldn't form a skillful surgeon, of course, and if I get an operation, I want a skillful surgeon. So some training has to be kept. But at this moment, I consider education is a word that takes over or is filled with the meaning of training and not with the meaning of development and creation. And that usurping of the word I find very dangerous. And I want to bring it back to be educated, not somebody who has a lot of data in his brain, but somebody who has the flexibility of making all the connections that are possible, which is closer to wisdom, in my view.
Yes, and of course, the art-making process, as we know it today, is there, this is certainly a program that, in a way of approaching, that would seem to be valuable to, you know, children all the way up through, you know, college, post-college. Postgraduate work, many artists today. Is there any programs that exist that are close to this model, that are in action? I mean, the Whitney Independent Study Program seems like it's, you know, a bit in that direction, but is there something that exists?
Progressive art schools that emphasize critical thinking are on the way to that. Reggio Emilia systems, basically in Italy, but then the improvements, like in Sweden, are also closer to this. But the weird thing is that all those systems are in very elitist institutions. Reggio Emilia is public in the Reggio Emilia area. It's part of the public school system. But similar approaches like Montessori and Waldorf and so on, which are older and less refined, are still, although holistic, are still reserved for those that can pay high fees for it. And the public education system has not found ways of accepting it or integrating it, even if it's accepted. So there's a class divide there already that is damaging.
That's true. And in your practice now, since we started off and are spending the discussion on an education which seems enormously important and in a way an accumulation perhaps of your years in the art world. Are you giving lectures on this do you talk about this?
I'm bugging as many people as I can. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not hopeful that things will happen in my lifetime. And I think one of our mistakes is instant gratification, thinking that whatever we do immediately will have a response. It probably will take several generations, and that's fine. I mean, culture moves slowly and collectively and anonymously, and egos are rather obstacles than help, which is one of the problems of art production today.
And that's true. And as you go around and talk to as many people as you can about this, what is the response you're getting? Does anything seem particularly hopeful or the opposite of that in terms of how people are reacting?
Resistance, because I think what I'm really using is common sense and at its best, not its worst. it's not stereotypical thinking, but it's it just makes sense. I mean, it's obvious to me, and this, to the audience, it seems to become obvious. I mean, I have really little opposition when I talk. Nobody tells me I'm full of shit or this is wrong, or it seems like quite logical. So it's planting seeds, and hopefully slowly something happens. And if not, I won't be here to witness the defeat either, so it doesn't matter.
Well, it's a subject that, you know, I really appreciate, because I remember, wasn't that long ago, I have a 14-year-old son, and when he was about 7 years old, was with a group of friends going to a museum, the British Museum in New Haven. And I went along with them. It was a group of friends. And as I began hearing them lecture, the students, and knowing that what was coming next was paper and pencils and drawing a Henry Moore,
yeah.
I was, you know, as an artist and an educator, it was the first time I was seeing that, and I was horrified, and I thought, oh, my God, these kids are going to be bored to tears, and this will make them think art is something very dull and boring, and there's hard work involved, and they can't do it besides, right? They're not going to be able to sketch a Henry Moore, although everything will say.
I mean, that's the problem with the whole education process. It's basically a filter process to identify the best people rather than better people. And education should be about betterment, not about identification. So, but meritocracy is good for the sake of the nation, whatever that means, for competitiveness, for the interest of others, not for the development of the individual. And then you end up in the United States, one of the few countries, you end up paying for it, having to pay for it in order to become part of that meritocracy. But ultimately, that's like asking soldiers to pay for the right to fight a war, which wouldn't make much sense, I think, at least not to me. Instead of being paid to do that, and I think students should be paid, not be charged.
I agree, and in this kind of, I mean, let's call it, you know, a vision of the future. You know, I would want to help this process. You know, I so identify with what you're saying, and would very much like to see this happen more now that. Also, I'm a father. I'm more interested in it, especially with children. How can people who are perhaps listening to this, as maybe as well as myself, allow this process to flourish more? My reaction to the British Museum was, okay, I'm going to start giving you tours of another museum, and I'm going to, you know, talk my own way, and you can draw whatever you want, or, you know, and try to expand it a little bit. But it was very loose and probably... still didn't really approach what was happening, although I was talking about Duchamp and other works and trying to get the kids to react to it. But a better model is what I needed. And what I'm asking is how can people contribute to this model in a concrete way so that so we have more of the kind of students and thinkers.
I think a lot is in asking questions rather than receiving answers. So why is a Henry Moore there and is revered by a group of people? According to the level of the students, of course. You can ask, who are the people that revere this? How much do they represent the world population? And then you realize two things. I mean, with all respect for Henry Moore, whom I do respect a lot, but the people... The audience for Henry Moore is an educated, usually affluent segment of the middle class, which is a tiny percentage of world population. And the values that make Henry Moore good are, to a big extent, referential to other work of art and to history of art. And that's a process that is not written by the audience, but written by a certain power structure. So a piece that is very expensive will have more respect than a piece that is dirt cheap regardless its quality. In order to define the quality, you have to refer to the canon. The canon is kept by gatekeepers and by the market. So all those questions are part of the so-called appreciation of a work of art and are not being addressed. The museum makes things memorable if they are not memorable just by showing it. It's like a super frame that designates the value of a piece. The museum usually, I mean there are exceptions, tends not to encourage heretical thinking, does not include a challenge of the canon, does not help the public to develop their own canon and compare it to the canon of the museum, uses educational programs as public relation programs after the fact instead of using them to plan together from the same zero moment of planning a show in terms of what repercussions the show will have in the public. The museum measures how many people come to a show to determine its success. It doesn't determine what happens in the viewer in terms of transformative change and makes that show useful one way or another. So there's a lot of stuff in the structure that is catering to consumption and to indoctrination and not to empowerment and liberation. And for me, education should do that. It should not train into the mold of what the power structure determines is a good citizen, but it should help people become good citizens within the decision-making process that they have. And all that, in all that, the art thinking is very important because it's actually the freest process in disciplinary thinking we have available. We can do stupid things, we can fail, we can do absurd things, we can do illogical things, we can do all the opposite of art, of science, as well as we can do scientific thinking. All that within a frame of reference of art, which for me means that art is actually an umbrella meta-discipline that encompasses science and not a parallel activity.
And I agree with that. Is there, in closing, I think this is a lot for viewers, listeners to think about and hopefully act upon in their own way, because this is reaching a lot of educators and curators. Are there, to further individuals' research on this, are there any books of theory of this kind or anything else you want to point people to? I think what you just said was very clear about asking questions and how that's done, and perhaps that's enough, but there's also even a restructuring of how museums, you know, validate and quantify the success of shows. So just, you know, in terms of further thinking, further reading, thinking of all the listeners as people who can help actualize in some way what you're discussing, is there any other reading you would suggest they do, or other ways to explore this?
Not that I'm aware of, but I mean, I'm interested in what the post-Reggio Emilia people do in Sweden. I think that's a very enlightened approach. And I can refer with Maria Carmen Gonzalez and Sofia Quiroz. We prepared the manual for teachers in the Guggenheim Museum for the show Under the Same Sun, which is online, which emphasizes the problem setting or phrasing that generated or may have generated the art examples we include. From the problem, we designed assignments and questions that are transdisciplinary. And then at the very end, as last stop, people see the work that generated the process. So instead of starting with the work of art and going backwards, we start from a real or a hypothetical beginning and lead the viewer to go through the steps that end up in the work of art and therefore provide a different understanding. So you don't have to acquire a lingo or jargon or art historical references to deal with the issue, but you have to think.
Lewis, thanks so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate your work, this direction that we're discussing, and the time you spent with me.
Okay, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.